Recording is on.
Okay, so welcome to the CCG Weekly. It is June 8th. My name is Wayne Cheng, I'll be moderating. Today we're going to be talking about the EIP 712 Signature 2021 and community topics. Apologies again for the last minute agenda email. It seems that it's still undelivered, but a link to the announcement is in the notes. So, quick note about IPR. Anyone can participate in it, but all substantive contributors to any CCG work items must be members of the CCG with full IPR agreement signed. Make sure you have a W-3 account and you sign the agreement. About call notes, these minutes and an audio recording of everything said on this call are archived at the meeting's GitHub URL. We are using IRC to queue users during the call, as well as to take minutes. You can use IRC or the JC text chat. All attendees should type present plus to get your name on the attendee list of the transcript. In IRC, type Q plus to add yourself to the queue with an optional reminder. If you're not an IRC, simply ask to be put on the queue. Please be brief so the rest of the queue can get a chance to chime in. You can always re-queue yourself. This meeting is held by voice, not by IRC. Off-topic IRC comments are subject to deletion from the record. We work hard to manage a single thread of conversations so everyone can participate and be heard. Please respect the group process by joining the queue when you have something to contribute. First, we have scribe selection. Would someone like to volunteer to scribe? Okay. Thank you so much, Chris. Appreciate it. Introductions and reintroductions. Would anyone like to introduce themselves to the group? I think everyone here is pretty familiar. Reintroductions. Does anyone want to reintroduce themselves to the group? Yeah. Again, for those joining, apologies for the last minute agenda. With the last minute of it, my fault and deliverability delays. It seems to have taken a while to get out. I still don't see it in my inbox, but you can find a link to the agenda here. Finally, I've gotten to the inbox. So just lesson learned. I will be a lot better about the timing on the agenda. Okay, great. So this point, we'll actually just go to the only action item in the GitHub, and that is also the first topic, EIP 712 Signature 2021. Heather has asked that I, as a co-owner of the work item, prospective co-owner of the work item, present the work item, and also address any questions. Oliver, unfortunately, couldn't make it because he's in European time and it's a little late with the conflict. But basically, I can share my screen and we can go over, the work item together. You can find a link to the spec here, and I believe the GitHub issue can be found here. So, and after this, we'll talk about what the community wants to talk about in future meetings. I think that there have been a lot of changes with the linked data signatures group and a bunch of others. It's a great opportunity to get a temperature check from the community on what people want to hear about here, what kind of speakers we can invite to talk about interesting topics. Long story short, we want to issue compliant linked data signatures from blockchain wallets like MetaMask and others as well. This is specifically for Ethereum's signing specification called EIP 712 and how we would propose to do that. believe we already have like two implementations of this or independent ones. Almost to the spec, might have to make some adjustments, but at a high level, it is notable that this is an LD proof specification. How do we assign something like a verifiable credential or a verifiable presentation or authorization capability using a crypto wallet or a blockchain wallet? This is the goal here, and this is a non-RDF canonicalized version, although our implementation at Spruce is currently using RDF canonicalization prior to signing, so both could be possible. Signature Scheme uses SecP256K1 because that is the curve, elliptic curve that Ethereum uses behind all its accounts. MetaMask is pretty widely used within the blockchain ecosystem, and this is a lot of prospective users of verifiable credentials, presentations, and the whole ecosystem of things. So with the Linked Data Signatures working group coming into existence, we can figure out signing methodologies that are really interoperable and cross-platform. And we define some certain parameters. Oliver actually did most of the writing for this. I'm just simply reviewing and presenting his work. And further contributions later, we had an implementation with some slight things, but Oliver has done the actual writing for this, just to be clear. So the suite consists of JCS, JSON canonicalization algorithm, or I think that's what it stands for. Let me just confirm so I'm not. Yeah, JSON canonicalization scheme. And it's a way to order things and make sure that the white spacing doesn't affect the signing, so that whenever you have two JSON objects that would result to the same JavaScript object, you could basically get the identical signature if you're using the same signature scheme. Digest algorithm and signature algorithm are both from what Ethereum use, the KKK hash and also ECDSA. What's different about EIP-712, if you're not familiar with the Ethereum ecosystem, is that Ethereum has EIP-712 as a specification as to how you will sign type structured data instead of signing arbitrary data, which is typically very dangerous. So basically, the specification is here as well if you want to read it. A lot of the wallets in the Ethereum ecosystem support this signing, and it has a specified way to convert data to something like JSON representation, things of that nature. So that is used to transform the data into a format that the wallets won't complain about and hopefully move towards a reasonable display to the end user. And then basically the verification method is used to use that the suite definition parameters to verify that it is indeed correctly signed. So I won't go into every detail in this spec, but it would be, we hope, a valid linked data signature, and we would have test vectors on how to accompany this. I think it's very well timed with the linked data signatures work, showing the flexibility of the specification. So that's the gist on the EIP-712 signature spec. Heather requested that I present this, and we're hoping to have this as a work item over at the CCG. So that's if there are any questions, happy to take them.
Is there a queue?
Speaker queue is empty. Go ahead.
What is the relationship between verifiable credential wallets and something like MetaMask?
Yeah, so MetaMask and other blockchain wallets can be used as basically the key management system that can also do signing. So if you want to use MetaMask to issue a verifiable credential or create a verifiable presentation with LD signing, we figured out how to use MetaMask to do that. And it's difficult to issue a JWT with MetaMask and other blockchain wallets because that would require that the wallets, know how to issue the JWTs to begin with. Most of them do not support that. Most of them support signing over some kind of type structure. including MetaMask or even arbitrary data in some cases. So being able to leverage that into a valid LD proof signature suite is very much the goal here. Does that answer your question or help?
So I'm no, well, it helps a lot. Under what circumstances would one need two wallets? And I'll ask the second part of the question. If a requirement like we have in healthcare that the signatures be non-repudiable, would there be yet a third wallet that would need to be used in order to have a non-repudiable signature?
Yeah, so basically, for non-repudiation, what someone might do is sign a verifiable credential and have someone also sign it, maybe in a new verifiable credential or something else that they have witnessed it and it has, they can persist it. There's also a persistence element with respect to non-repudiation, but none of, you know, the data need to hit the blockchain at all or be stored on there. Does that help?
No. In general, non-repudiation in healthcare involves a hardware token or the equivalent FIDO2-like thing in a mobile phone. They generally, in other words, they want something that's biometrically linked. Not countersigning would be fine, but it's can't be used, you know, 25 times a day. You know, just again, maybe this is going too deep and it should be a separate topic in itself, but just the issue of wallets as it relates to Ethereum credentials and non-repudiable signatures seems to me like an under-discussed topic.
Got it. I think that's a great point. I don't know. I'm not an expert enough on the healthcare system in terms of how that applies to the regulations. The use cases that have been cropping up in the blockchain ecosystem are being able to attest data or statements within that ecosystem. So I think that would be a separate topic for exploration, depending on those requirements for where the data must live and how things have to be stored. All right, so on the queue, Ori?
Yeah, so I queued to respond to Adrian's question about Ethereum addresses, or I think generally blockchain addresses, wallets, and verifiable credentials. A big part of the I can't hear Ori. Can everyone else hear me?
Yeah, just fine.
All right. Chris, let me know if you can't hear.
I'll stand and scribe for now.
What I'm saying. So a big part of the Universal Wallet Interop spec was to describe the relationship between cryptocurrency, blockchain addresses, verifiable credentials, keys, and decentralized identifiers. And the short answer to your question, Adrian, is that all of these things are related in that people use the words wallet to describe various aspects of this. Keys are used to transfer cryptocurrency. Keys are used to issue verifiable credentials. Keys are used to control decentralized identifiers. Keys are usually found in a wallet either directly as exportable keys or via reference to hardware-bound keys. The statements about non-repudiation are probably too technical to get into on this call, but suffice to say you can issue non-repudiable signatures from non-hardware bound keys. And yeah, that's basically it. So I think we've tried in the Universal Wallet Interop spec to cover some of these relationships in terms of providing examples or explaining how they might be related. And if you have interest in any of that sort of side of things, like the relationship between addresses, blockchain verifiable credentials generally, and DIDs, and the Universal Wallet Interop spec doesn't answer your questions, I'd love to know how we might improve the spec so that it does better answer those questions. Thanks.
Hey, Corey, would you mind sharing a link to the Universal Wallet Interop spec?
Yeah, I did previously in chat, but I'll share it again. Here's the specific section that discusses MetaMask addresses as a wallet concept. There's actually software code that shows how to produce universal wallet interop spec formatted JSON from MetaMask.
Thanks so much. Heather, you're on the queue.
Great, thanks. Are you guys able to hear me?
Yep, just fine.
Cool. Okay, so thanks for answering these work item questions. I read what you guys wrote to the answer to number one like 10 times, and I still don't get it. But I read the answer to number three, and I think I understand it. And so are you just making it so that Ethereum wallets can both receive and hold VCs and issue VCs?
Nearly. We aren't storing verifiable credentials, but issuing is definitely possible. Verification is a question mark. So issuance of VCs, signing of verifiable presentations or ZCaps, anything that requires some signing, this would enable, is the idea.
And so if it's not, so it's not going to be holding the VCs, but it would be reading them.
It would be reading data to sign, that could then produce a valid signature for example, a VC.
Okay. So you've got Ethereum wallets, MetaMask. You give it some data, you are going to, verify and then want to issue a verifiable credential using that MetaMask or Ethereum wallet to issue that credential. Is that
correct? Yeah.
Okay. And then the technical explanation, like the how you do it, like that's the what. The how is by using the signature suite. And is this, okay, so is this signature sheet suite a child of Link's data proof, or is it a peer that is using Link's data proof spec?
I'd say that it is one of the many suites that could plug into what is specified with the linked data proofs and what is going to result from the linked data signatures group.
Oh, I lost the last bit of what you were saying.
Oh, it is one of the many signature suites that could basically plug in and conform to the linked data suites specification that's coming out. Linked data signatures or LD proofs.
Okay. Thank you. And I guess, thinking about that and thinking about the different, I don't know the word to categorize it. Cause there's a lot of different, I guess, signature suites. There's like, LD signature suites that are for, I'm just thinking about the organizational cleanup in our repo. We have a lot of top level LDS items. There are different, ways to sign, different proofs to sign, linked data. I'm wondering if there's a way for us to categorize like the top level explanation of what this functionality does, like what it does, and then, or what the, I don't even know if technology is the right word, the overall concept of it. But then these are the technology options you can use. And one of them is this EIP-712 signature.
That's right. I think that's exactly correct. And fortunately, it might even be within the mandate of the up and coming working group to organize that. And it could be potentially a great destination for a lot of these work items to successfully graduate.
Okay. So are you saying that you then want to incubate this LD work, the EIP-712 signature in the CCG, but it potentially is on track to go into the LD working group at some point in the future?
Yeah, perhaps it listed in a registry that is managed there, or maybe there's some ability to register a subsuite there. We don't know. Would love to work with the working group members on that.
So I think this all sounds really good. I think what could be useful is, and maybe Wayne, you and I can put on our chair's hat later and figure out or talk to the coming LD working group and figure out a way to migrate that work that's been happening or a pathway for this, for all the LD work that's happening in the CCG, including this, to whatever find its home in that working group.
Okay, great. That sounds good.
Okay, cool. Thanks.
Thank you. Fine.
Hi.
Art Brown, yeah, go ahead.
So I have a question about the use of EIP 712 here. Is the intent to read and understand the LD proof and then write that into a format that an EIP 712 signature can make sense of? Or is it more some kind of transport layer thing where you want to take an existing LD thing and wrap it up in this EIP 712 type signature?
Yeah, so it's neither of those. In fact, we're trying to figure out things like what the claims data would actually be. For example, that animal is a dog, and you know the dog's name is Herbert, right? And you might have two fields for the type of animal and its name, right? That would be put into this EIP 712 format so that it could be read pretty ergonomically by MetaMask users for signing. And then the signature over that format would be the basis for the signature that is put inside the LD proof section within a verifiable credential or something.
I see. So it would be presented using EIP 712 format. The signature then would then be extracted to apply to the JSON LD data as it had been expecting it.
Exactly. Yep. And it could be JSON LD data or just normal data as well, because we use JSON canonicalization scheme here. So we're not actually doing RDF canonicalization, although that is a possibility too, possibly, you know, another valid wit direction. But that's what we're hoping to explore in the work item. And one of the nice things is that the JSON that goes into this can still look like regular plain JSON to the user. We describe how to transform it using EIP 712 so it can display in the wallet pretty cohesively.
Okay, I think I understand that. And then it's the wallet's responsibility to take the JSON LD data and present it in an EIP 712 format in a responsible way that does not confuse the user or allow confusing things to cause the user to press the wrong button, right?
Yep, exactly. And some companion work as part of this work item might be like a signing string explainer, you know, like what does this actually mean, and really hope to present it to the user to understand what they're signing. Yep, so that's definitely what we're trying to do here.
Thanks.
Yeah, I also add that MetaMask supports multiple accounts using key derivation and uncorrelated identifiers and keys is the hope there. So it is perfectly fine to have a single MetaMask wallet and multiple accounts, maybe one that is only used to sign certain things. It's already supported in the software. Phil?
Yeah, I just... when you're talking about the wallet or the holder with the wallet presenting a, or issuing a credential, is that distinct from the presentation protocols that's been worked on for packaging up credentials that the wallet holds? Or are you using those two terms synonymously?
Yeah, so there's a bit of term overloading here in the blockchain ecosystem. When we talk about wallets, mostly we're talking about, and I'll caveat this, but mostly we're talking about key management systems that end users can use. And in this, so it's not actually storing the data inside, like a verifiable credential inside, but rather we're just relying upon it for the signing functionality. And so this is very compatible with creating a verifiable presentation if you're willing to create a verifiable presentation that uses the LD proofs format. Even an authorization capability that is using the LD proofs format would be compatible with this.
Got it. Thank you.
Adrian.
Okay, so it's taken me half an hour to see if I'm actually getting this, because what I'm hearing, and please tell me if I've got this right, it has nothing to do with the signature suite itself, even though you sort of featured that. It has everything to do with the fact that before you can sign something, you have to trust the thing that is being displayed to you to sign. And you, the intent here, it sounds like, is to use the fact that MetaMask is like Firefox. In other words, it's this piece of open source thing that a lot of people, for very good reason, have a lot of eyes on. And if MetaMask or Firefox ever cheated on what it is that you were signing or how it was acting as your user agent in general, there would be a huge, huge fuss, and it would take only a day to figure this out. So am I right that this is really what the value is of what's being proposed here? And that is why, on the one hand, you're saying this has nothing to do with storing the VC or holding it. And on the other hand, I'm asking you, Dmitry, saying, well, there are ways to do this without a biometric link to a secure hardware thingy, but I certainly don't know what that is. Am I right in sort of getting down to the brass tacks here?
Yep, that's correct. And it's not just MetaMask that supports this, but all wallets within the Ethereum ecosystem that support EIP 712, which is, I believe, many of them, you know, collectively custody over millions, possibly billions of assets. And there's a lot of incentive here to keep that signing process very secure, even if you do something that's non-traditional, like do it in a browser extension. It's just been battle tested for a long time. And that's basically all that we can hope for from a security perspective in the long term.
And just to double check, then, the fact that you're doing this in the linked data context is because it makes it much easier to check for errors or for hacks in what it is that you're signing than if we weren't using linked data. So it makes the whole thing more reliable in this prime function. Is that correct?
Yep.
Thank you. That's wonderful. Now all I have to do is figure out the non-repudiation part. Because that doesn't seem to be linked to something that, currency wallets would care about, but is something that in general we care about with respect to DIBs and VCs.
Yep. And the last thing I'll say about this, unless people have more questions, is that, this is possible with LD proofs and not JWTs, because we would have to modify MetaMask to issue JWTs arbitrarily or conforming to the different formats, right? And the prospect of making pretty significant code changes to such a high security application in wide use is pretty unlikely, not just for MetaMask, but any other blockchain wallets out there. Maybe there will be some that support different formats, but, if you're looking to provide a secure solution out of the box, it's hard to, understand the timelines around that. So thanks so much for listening to that. Looks like the queue is empty. Oh, and Heather, if you're talking about announcements, we can move to that.
No, I just have a comment on this, and I do have some announcements. But so, Wayne, I just want to say thanks for bringing this to the meeting today. I think I get it, and it sounds really exciting. What I would like to ask is that, because that first part is like the answers to some of those questions are still pretty technical. They're pretty describing the how, which, it's a little bit hard. It's a little bit of a heavy lift to really understand the excitement and power of what you're proposing here and the impact of it. So I'm just wondering if maybe some of the folks on that group or like, and I'm willing to help as well, to make the description of what it is that this is and why it's so, why it could be so powerful. 'Cause you have the how here, like it's totally, it makes a lot of sense. If we could just add that to some of And if you want to add this to like a README or something, like I don't think we need to hold up approving this work item for this, but I'd just like to see a bit more of the insights and understanding that we've gotten from this call in a README so that someone who is coming to this for the first time can really understand the power of what this is proposing.
Okay, great. Would you be open to like an issue in the repo? And we would put that there, like write a README explainer as one of the things we focus on for the work item.
Yeah, and I'm also really happy to help with you guys on that. Like if you guys, you know, are gonna meet sometime or talk about what that is, or you know, if someone wants to write some bullet points about what this is, I'm happy to come in and do some clarifying edits or add more things to it to make it more accessible to you know, folks that are not like deep in the weeds on it.
Okay, thank you so much. Now, I understand that there are two announcements that might be made. I think this would be a good segue point. And I think Kalia, you're first, and then Heather, if you still have announcements, and then we can move on to talking about community topics.
Super cool. Thanks, Wayne. I just wanted to share with this group that the Good Health Pass process has developed. We've completed our work in 10 drafting groups and have a draft available for public review. We launched, released it yesterday, and we have 10 days of public review, so that ends next Thursday. I put a link to the wiki page where you can find the draft blueprint and the forms to give feedback if you have any. We make a recommendation to use JSON-LD ZKP with BBS Plus verifiable credentials, and we also point to the WACI PEX standard for credential exchange, which is trying to bridge the gap between the sovereign / indie / Aries universe, I guess, and the SVIP universe in terms of being able to exchange credentials between those two different sort of pods of interoperability. And there's lots more in there, but it's really about how do we get credentials to be exchanged for health, this, you know, the COVID health crisis and sort of vaccination certs that will be required to travel internationally. So we'd love people's feedback from here.
Thank you. That is such an important focus area for everyone. Much appreciated. Heather.
Yeah, great. I guess I've actually got two. So last Friday, Ryan Grant and I met, and we recorded our session of how to create minutes. It's been posted to the list, and we'll put it up on YouTube. But this is actually, it's a really good overview because I went through the process. It is very detailed. It's pretty long. You can listen to it on 2x speed and I think still get it. But it goes through the entire process of what it takes to create minutes using the GitHub desktop interface. The other thing I wanted to say is that today at 2 p.m. Pacific, Carrie Lemoy from VCEDU is going to be doing the intro to VCs from an educational perspective as part of the 101 series.
Awesome. Thank you. Okay. So we have about 20 minutes to talk about community topics. And basically, I wanted to survey everyone about what they wanted to hear about. If there are any topics that we're not focusing enough, I can start off or I can yield to the queue. Adrian.
So this is actually continues on Kalia's point. I am very interested in talking about how verifiable credentials are go from the verifier to the from the issuer to the verifier, and we are also working in the context of vaccine credentials, though nothing at all to do with the sort of major projects. But this might be the topic that I call authorization, I'm interested in having quite a bit of discussion. What Kalia is talking about is now front and center in the VC-HTTP spec, for example, or work group, for example, as well as other places that are related to it. Thanks.
Great. What other topics are people interested in hearing about and discussing further here? As chairs, we can help by bringing in topical experts who are world-class, like Heather was able to get Tim Berners-Lee in here to talk about the Solid ecosystem earlier this year. If there's interest in, you know, areas like privacy and national identity, things of that nature, there are other folks we can consult with to drive the conversation here as it relates to all the work items. I think we should send a survey after this, then, in case people have thoughts after the fact. Don't mean to put everyone on the spot here, but any kind of other directions in addition to authorization, definitely welcome.
Zero trust architecture. Can we find anybody that is expert enough? It has become front and center as a result of the executive order a month ago, basically saying all federal agencies have 60 days to come up with their zero trust architecture implementation plan, and they will then have, you know, a year or two or whatever. These are federal agencies after all. But I think it would be incredibly useful to this community to understand the relationship between what we're doing, you know, again, in terms of holding people accountable for their own actions in a non-repudiable way, and this major push towards zero trust architecture as a security thing. So I don't know who that expert might be, but there might be people in the community that would, all the talks I've heard have been very lame and sort of aimed at selling you the piece of software du jour rather than the kind of high quality stuff we are looking for.
Thanks, Adrian. I added myself to the queue. I'd like to talk more about the so-called normalization, a presentation of strong credentials, and the growing privacy issue that we'll encounter here. I think that identities will become digital. We just saw Apple release, support on iOS devices for identity. I believe driver's licenses in the U.S. Were of the topic of their latest announcement, but it's happening. And pretending that it's not happening and just talking about how awful digital identity could be at the nation state level, you know, that that probably is not the most productive approach, in my opinion. I feel that we have to assume that large parts of the world will move to digital national identity and figure out what is the best way to navigate that with the tools that we have to prevent things like the presentation, the normalization of presentation of strong credentialing. That is, if it's easier to present your driver's license or passport, will more people start asking about it, sometimes inappropriately, and shifting the balance of power. So if anyone knows any speakers or has experts in this, there are a lot of folks at the ACLU and EFF who are interested in this. Lori?
Do we want to ask the ACLU or the EFF to come present and speak on this? I know I've asked the EFF to speak at events previously, and they tend to like to have it be covered in some way, at least when I ask them to come speak at my university. I'm not sure if the same would be true for the W3C CCG, but I think we are the credentials community group, and given what's happening in the ecosystem today, I think it would be really excellent to hear from someone from the ACLU or EFF.
That sounds like a wonderful idea, to ask someone to present on their thoughts and position, and including ways forward that they see. Great. What other topics would folks like to hear about on Future Pulse? We went over authorization, We went over zero trust architecture. We went over privacy, especially as they relate to a strong identity that's digital. Another item, and and Phil, you can go first.
Sure. This may be related to the trust architecture, but one of the things in the education space is that's emerging is that the interest in the richness of metadata and objects in a credential to represent an achievement assertion is getting to the point where the possibility of actually moving the credential from point A to point B is coming into question. It's suggesting that the credential, in fact, might be better reorganized as a spine of linked data pointers to secured objects with hash links between them to guarantee they haven't been modified since they were originally placed in whatever the location is. So there's an issue about the structure of credentials in a practical sense in terms of what can be moved around and a method by which they can be designed so that we can take advantage of more directly linked data to preserve the various attributes of those metadata attributes of those credentials, which are of size usefully. I don't know if I explained that well enough, but that was my attempt.
Thank you, Phil. I think that's extremely interesting as well. I was personally interested in micro-credentials and where they might fit in. What are some actual use cases that we see out there? For example, I think that the Open Badges ecosystem, which I know is actively being discussed in the VC-EDU task force, they're already pretty well supported across, you know, millions of issuances. So figuring out what other pockets of activity are there but not canonicalized is definitely really interesting to me.
Yeah, I'm a part of that of a subgroup that's from the WC3C VC-EDU that's looking at micro-credentials, and one of the things that's emerged is there is an evidence array that's part of the spec for a micro-credential, an OBIV2 data model, which allows you to put in URIs to evidence of work. Evidence of work might be a CAD file for an engineer or a video or things like that. But those are too big, obviously, to package into the credential itself. Those kinds of things are one aspect of the inflation, if you will, and the size of potential credential metadata. Another has to do with institutions that want to bundle together all of the assertions associated with courses, all of the assertions associated with micro badges that might be affiliated with the course, and perhaps other things associated with competencies and skills into a single entity, which some people in the field have tried to do, but then they can't actually move it from point A to point B.
Great. Thank you. Are there any other topics that people would like to hear about that haven't been mentioned? These are a great list, and we can imagine a lot of great sessions for the weekly to talk about these with the right experts, too. Kalia.
If folks are interested, I'm happy to present about my book that was published last year, The Domains of Identity. That was an attempt to support better dialogue across the range of entities that want to talk about the topic but often mush things together.
Thank you. I think facilitating conversation and, you know, finding the right vocabulary to talk about things is important and definitely on topic for this community. One more topic I will cue myself for is I think that there is a pretty good chance that there may be some degree of mandated interoperability across large digital platforms due to recent, I guess, whisperings at the FTC, Federal Trade Commission in the U.S., and also what the EFF's framework is. I believe it's called competitive forgot what it was called. I think it was like competitive interoperability or something like that. There was a catchy term for it. But the idea that and this could be used to as an implement in antitrust regulation as well, which may be coming, and how that relates to our work specifically as an ecosystem. These standards are really what you start to grab towards when you start talking about interoperability. I think it's competitive compatibility, COMCOM, if you're interested in reading what the EFF has to say about that. It's the idea that you can integrate even if you're a competitor to someone else, because the user should really have control over where the data are moved.
That's like open banking type stuff, and is it the same thing as open banking?
I'd say it's definitely in a similar strain. Right? I'd say it's the same ideological concept. And I think open banking is interesting in itself too. I feel that PSD2, the Payment Services Directive 2 in Europe, is an interesting application of a lot of the technologies this ecosystem has been working on, and creating a stronger mapping to the initiatives there, that a lot of them are based on, I think, OpenID technologies, how that plays with the verifiable credential. The problem that I believe a lot of financial institutions are solving in Europe is, if it's supposed to be one financial market and consumers should be able to get the best rates possible across the whole region, not just the ones that their local banks offer, and trying to use technology as a tool for interoperability to ensure that has been the goals of a lot of the regulations at the European Commission level. That could be interesting to talk about.
Yeah, I mean, in the sense of the antitrust and lock-in thing, I see this as being a major authorization issue. I see it indistinguishable because what happens in both cases is that control is consolidated when the controller and the processor are sort of run by the same entity. And so you then need regulations like PSD2 in order to separate out the GDPR controller from the GDPR processor. And I agree with you. I think it's a very relevant thing, but I just think of it as authorization.
I will continue to pull topics out of my hat until it's empty, but everyone is free to queue and I will prioritize you. Another topic, and maybe this is to also solicit feedback on appropriateness of this topic, the activity within ISF Lab and the broader European Commission ecosystem that seems to really have taken a liking to the self-sovereign identity concept, and understanding its relationship there could make for a very good session. I believe we had previous sessions with Anil John from the Department of Homeland Security here in the U.S., and they're, I think, also talking to the government of British Columbia about their org book. Those were extremely interesting. There are other regions, including many groups focused on decentralized identity in Asia Pacific, such as I believe in Korea, there might be several organizations there, getting them to talk to this group and understand where they fit within the government or private sector and what their goals are with respect to the technology could also be topical too. So if any of those, resonate with you, feel free to comment or reach out to the chairs, and we'll make sure to prioritize finding experts who can talk about those for an engaging weekly. Oh, yeah, I didn't even mention Singapore, but Chris did, and Singapore is doing a lot of interesting things too. Okay, so my hat is now empty. If anyone else has any other topics, feel free to bring them up. Otherwise, it looks like we'll end a few minutes early. Great. I think there's a lot of traction and momentum in the ecosystem. I'm personally extremely excited, and we're going to have an awesome set of content for everyone on the weeklies, I think, over the next few months. So thanks so much for coming to this weekly, and especially a big thank you to Chris for scribing. And then I will see you all next week. Meeting adjourned.
Thank you.